And now, The Father Within Me, the story of Bobby Howard's son. On June 10th of this year, Robert Howard Jr. agreed to sit down with me for an interview on the 46th anniversary of his father's death. Here now is his story.
As you know, I grew up in Norwich. I grew up an only child. My father was killed on June 10th, 1969, which is today. Mm-hmm. And kind of ironically, I come down every time around the 9th or the 10th or the 11th, and I visit my father's grave. We talk for a little while. Just tell him what's going on. Like, you know, he already knows what's going on with me, but, you know, I like to voice it. So it's kind of serene for me to sit there and just have a conversation with him. Yeah. Sometimes it's difficult. It's gotten better over the years. As time goes on, I guess it gets better and better, easier and easier for me. Memories of my father, I really don't have any. I remember the day that they came to the door, told my mother that my father was killed in action, and I remember his funeral. Vaguely remember the ceremony where I received medals and different types of honors, and at the old armory that is...
You were how old now?
I was 4 years old. Yeah. I was 4 years old. I vaguely remember the armory. I more so remember the funeral more than anything else. You know, looking at this man in a casket and not realizing the impact that later on in life this would have on me.
Yeah.
So as I grew up, a lot of people that knew my father, some of them told me they knew him, some didn't. I always had a fascination for, you know, who he was, who was this guy, you know. You know, I was very fortunate in my life that I had a stepfather that assumed that role in raising me. And he never wavered. You know, he was always there for me. Whatever I needed, he was always there, you know, and I have to give him a lot of credit. And I believe even today, even years ago, that he was placed in my life for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as a grown up, you know, I knew my father had went to NFA and everything else, and, you know, by all the awards and just the impact that he had on Norwich, and the impact that, you know, he had on people that, you know, he's come in touch with, you know, through his short 24 years. It's amazing to me even today, you know, the amount of people that, you know, still feel affected today by the loss of him. Mm. And they got to know him a lot longer than I did.
He touched a lot of people's lives. In his short life.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So growing up, my idea was to go to NFA just like the rest of the Howards went, and be this magnificent football player like my father was. And that was my whole goal, was just to go to NFA because I knew I could get certain amenities that other students couldn't get because my last name was Howard. At least that's what I assumed.
Yeah.
Come to find out, my mother wouldn't let me go. Mm-hmm. She's like, "You're going to St. Bernard's," and you know, it was. I didn't see that at that time and age when I was young, but it was definitely for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
I even tried to flunk the test getting into St. Bernard's, and I still got in.
You must be one smart dude.
You know, I still got in, and you know, as time went on. Up to my senior year, from my junior to my senior year, I set a goal for myself that I was going to be better than my father. I knew all his stats. I knew how many touchdowns he rushed for. I knew that he led the CDC in scoring. He rushed for somewhere around 700 to 800 yards, and I was like, "That's my goal. That's my goal. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do better than that." And when I got hurt playing against New London High School, that's when I believe my downfall came into play because I couldn't, you know, one doctor said, "Well, you're done. You can't play anymore." And I think that was maybe the fifth game of the year. Wow. He's like, "Well, you're done for the season," because I had separated my collarbone and I was just totally crushed. Didn't really show it too much, but I was crushed. So eventually my mother took me to a specialist and, you know, he gave me he said, "Hey, listen, you can't play for the next 3 weeks, but the last week of the game, you'll be able to play as long as you wear this brace Take care of yourself. Don't do anything strenuous. And I said, great, that's no problem. I'll do that. And so I sat out the next 2 to 3 weeks of football, just waiting for this last game of the year, which was against NFA. So I was crushed that I couldn't break any of the records that he hit, any of his personal bests. I couldn't break those. But I was like, you know what? Playing the last game of the year, I'm happy. Even though my season didn't turn out the way I wanted to. And, you know, I've already been accepted into college. I'm going to
Howard. This was your senior year?
Yeah, this is my senior year. I was going to Howard University.
Good.
And because I thought it was named after my father when I was young.
Yeah, that's understandable. You know,
I found the name in my mother's address book, and I was like, oh wow, they named the school after my father because he was bigger than life to me.
Oh yeah,
I didn't know any better. I was young.
Sure,
I think I was maybe in the fourth or fifth grade or something like that. So Howard University always stayed in my head. So I got accepted there, and last game of the year, coach tells me, well, I'm not going to start you. So I was kind of crushed at that because here I am, last game of the year, and one of the coaches, Bob DeMars, is a guy that grew up, knew my father. I believe his brother played with my father, and he knew how much it meant to me, and he was one of the assistant coaches. So he was, you know, tried to tell me to calm down and everything else, and, you know, I was just hurt. I was crushed. But here it is. They're talking about it on the radio. You know, we're talking 1982. Our father was killed in 1969, and they're still talking about Bobby Howard's sons playing today, the St. Bernards, this, that, and other thing. I really didn't hear it, but people told me that they heard them talking about him on the radio, and I was like, wow.
Pretty powerful.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I played that game, and I got hurt again. So...
Now, a minute ago, I said you were a pretty smart guy.
I got hurt again in the game. So, I mean, it happened. And, you know, I was definitely, it still bothered me. And nobody really knew that it bothered me. And then I went to Howard, ended up dropping out of school because I had no desire to study. I had some things happen when I was down there, and I just lost all direction whatsoever. And that's when I came back to New London. And the lifestyle I led after that was just, it was a death wish waiting to happen.
Rough around the edges, huh?
Extremely rough.
Yeah,
I got into drugs, not so much alcohol, but a lot of crack, cocaine, selling, using, mostly using. And, you know, I did a couple stints in rehab, and actually on June 9th of 19, it was 24, I was 23, 24, when I was 24 on June 9th of 19, I'm trying to think what year it was, 1988, I had a seizure a day before. My father was killed at the same age and almost died. If it wasn't for a family friend that noticed what had happened to me, I don't think I'd be here today. And it was from, you know, coming down off drugs. My body just shut down completely. And the very next day I was receiving an award, which my father was inducted to the into the Norwich Hall of Fame, Norwich Sports Hall of Fame. How I was going to do it, I don't know.
Heaven knows,
I didn't know. I was in the hospital. Now, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 days after that I was receiving the award. So I finally got up there. I received the award. I was very emotional because I didn't know anything. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know this man that everybody was in tears over. I was in tears, too, because I had no knowledge of him.
You had a void.
I had a void.
Yeah.
I had a very big void in my life. And, you know, but I seen the effect that he had on people again, you know, and I didn't understand it. You know, I didn't know. And I got to a point where I used to just shut down, and I didn't want anybody talking about him, especially around me. Because I didn't know him. I felt cheated. I felt, I was mad. I was upset. It wasn't fair that you knew him and I didn't. But one thing I can say is that my mother always kept me around his brothers and sisters, which was kind of comforting because it was okay for them to talk about him because that's their brother.
Yeah.
You know, I could take that. I couldn't take a stranger coming up to me and saying, well, I knew your father. And I was like, don't talk to me
about it. Go away. Yeah.
You know, don't talk to me about it. And it was just a real tough, tough thing for me. And for years, it felt like a weight that I was carrying around. And I used to walk around with a medallion that had his picture engraved on it. And it wasn't until I was, I want to say maybe 32, 33 years old, that I finally was able to lift the weight off my chest when I took my trip to Vietnam. But before that, I had joined a group called Sons and Daughters in Touch. I got my life together. I had gotten clean. So I was feeling good. You know, about 1989, I got my life clean. I had gotten off the drugs.
Awesome.
You know, it was just one day. I was just miserable. I was tired. I was beat up. And by this time, my family had given me what you call tough love. Mm-hmm. They cut me off, which I didn't blame them. Mm-hmm. I didn't blame anybody for that, you know. Because at that point, I really didn't care about myself. If I could be with my father, I'd be fine. I remember one time when I was in rehab in Willimantic, I had a dream that I was searching and searching for my father's body. There was all these bodies, and I was searching, searching, searching. And I got mad at my roommate and almost assaulted him because he woke me up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, you know, screaming at him. He was like, what is wrong? And I was like, nothing. You know, and I talked to my Aunt Amanda. I don't think I ever told my mother about it, but I talked to my Aunt Amanda, and I was like, what does that mean? She's like, you're searching for something that you're never going to find.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you didn't find him, you know. But about 1989, I got my life straight. I joined a group called Sons and Daughters in Touch. And I was kind of hesitant at first to attend. I didn't attend their first Father's Day down at the wall. And I had been down to the wall many times because I went to school in D.C. And when I went down to visit, me and my mother had went down there. And when we went down there, there were still wooden planks that used to lead to where, you know, the names were.
Oh.
That wasn't even put in yet. Yeah. They had just started it. So I joined Sons and Daughters in Touch. The first year I didn't go because I was still kind of hesitant. I wanted to just take these feelings and set them aside. I didn't want anybody to know how vulnerable I was or anything like that. Yeah. You know,
a lot of baggage, a lot to carry.
And the second year I went, I went down there, me and my godson, because him and his father were at odds ends. They didn't see eye to eye or anything, and he wasn't really in his life, and I was trying to connect them because I was like, listen, you don't have to grow up like I did. Mm-hmm. You know, your father's alive, so you need to have that. You need to form some type of relationship with him so you don't have that void. And I knew what he was going through, and it wasn't more so like what I was going through, but there was a void. So me and my godson went down there, and his father met us, and it was good. It was really good. They got to talking. I started to let some of my feelings out to some people because I'm still, you know, I'm still apprehensive about people showing people that vulnerable side of me.
Yeah.
And eventually, I started going down every year because I started making friends, and I was like, you know what? I'm not the only one in this boat. I'm not the only one that has lost a father. You know, but it felt like that in Norwich because Norwich was so small. It was a close-knit community. Whether you lived in Norwich or you lived outside of Norwich, mm-hmm. it was a close-knit community because NFA serviced a lot of areas. And but I'm not the only child, as I was corrected not too long ago, that, you know, there was another gentleman that's on the wall in Norwich that he also had children, but at the time they were living in Florida.
Yeah.
So.
And you didn't know that.
And I didn't know that.
You were walking this walk as a young man, yeah. Pretty much alone.
Yeah. And, you know, so I started making friends and I started to feel good and feel better. And then they said, hey, we're going to have a trip. We're going to make a trip to Vietnam. And I said, wow. I said, okay. But I was still apprehensive about going.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how I was going to feel, how I was going to react. And I was like, this trip was somewhere around $3,000 to $4,000. And I was like, well, how am I going to come up with the money? Well, between my mother, Tom Burke, and a host of friends and family members and, you know, Howard Dickerman, you know, all donating, I was able to take the trip, you know, which was phenomenal. And during that trip, you know, people were like, well, how are you going to react? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't know. I can't say, you know, and I'm here with, I believe it was 64 or 50, between 50 and 60 sons and daughters and 12 to 14 vets, some going back for the first time. So my particular, it was even leading up to that, planning this trip and everything else that was involved in it was just, you know, I met the guy that was doing all the background work as to where the area is, so, you know, where did your father serve? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You're asking the wrong person. Well, my mother had saved a letter that was written to me as a child. And I, you know, I told him, I said, well, my mother may have some stuff. So she submitted it to him. I forgot his name. It was Richard. I forgot his name. So he sees the letter. And because he went to West Point, I guess he had a lot of access to a lot of the data and some of the people. So he realized it was Bill Zert. And come to find out, these two were in West Point together. They were classmates.
Really? Yeah.
So it's kind of a reunion for them. And so, you know, he took the letter. He used the information that was on it. He contacted Bill Zert. Bill Zert told him, you know, where everything happened and stuff like that. And he asked him, you know, would you like to speak to Robert? He was like, no, I don't want to talk to him. And so he contacted me and he told me, he says, well, he doesn't want to talk to you. I didn't take it personal, but I was like, you know, tell him I apologize if I, you know, bring up any old feeling, any feelings, anything like that. I kind of understood because I may have, you know, stirred the bees hive or whatever you want to call it. And a couple of days later, the guy that was doing all the legwork for Sons and Daughters calls me back. He says he wants to talk to you. He says he's willing to talk to you. So he called me. I was at work. And when I talked to him, it was like he was there yesterday. The detail and the way he remembered everything and how things happened was just, I was blown away.
Yeah.
I was just like, and I couldn't say anything to him, and I just listened. And that was a real, real emotional day for me. Really, really emotional day. And luckily I had one of my close reps was there. She was able to, you know, sit down, relax, and able to console me, and because it was giving me a piece of my father that I didn't
never
have.
never had.
Yeah. And later on, I took my trip. Actually, I think it was before the trip. I ended up going to the 101st Airborne's reunion. He was they asked me to come to San Antonio. And I said, okay, fine, I'll come. So I can meet some guys that serve with him. And Bill only came because I was coming. And in the book, he states that, and I vaguely remembered him telling me that I wasn't going to come if you didn't come. So I came. We met. It was an emotional couple of days, but these guys took me in. They wouldn't let me pay for anything. It was like I had a whole bunch of uncles and, you know, everybody else. And they looked after me like I was their child.
Yeah.
And, but it felt good. It felt good. And for Bill Zert, we spent the whole entire weekend together, whether we went to breakfast, we went to lunch, we went to dinner, we just talked. And when they made me an honorary member, it was just like,
wow,
you know, and the thing, his wife, I'm sitting there at the banquet, and I'm sitting with his wife, and she says, Robert. I said, yes. She said, you know, I learned more about this man in 3 days than the 30-something years I've been married to him after he talked to you. And I was like, she said, yeah. She said, he finally got help. He finally got help for his PTSD.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm sorry. She's like, no. She said he finally started healing. And I was just blown away. And
you helped her.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Without even knowing it.
Not even knowing it. And while I was in San Antonio, they told me that another guy had went up on their page, because I used to do all this searching on the internet for anybody that served with my father. And so I posted on the internet, and this, the historian for the 101st says, Robert, when you get home, he said, there's something on a webpage for you. Take a look at it. I said, okay. Took a look at it, and it was a guy that actually, he says, you know what? He says, I remember the day. He says, I remember pulling out this young black man from that area, because my father was the only one that was killed on that day. And in that particular part of the Oshawa Valley. He says, I remember bringing him out, and he says, it's been haunting me ever since that day. And we're talking 20, 30 years later, if not more. And so we talked for a while, and he called me maybe about a month or two later, and he says, Robert, I can finally sleep. And I was like, okay, I helped you. I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to say. I was just not realizing by him talking to me, it actually helped him.
Yeah.
So when I made this trip, after all was said and done, after I made the trip to Vietnam, when I was there, a friend of mine, Dennis Shine, his father was killed on a part of the Oshawa Valley that borders Cambodia. And even the day before we were making these trips to the areas, because there was four teams, each one, it was different parts of Vietnam. And we do all day excursions to these areas trying to get to where our fathers, you know, were killed in the line of duty. And Dennis's father, I believe he was shot down on part of the Oshawa Valley that borders Cambodia. And they weren't sure that they were going to be able to get to my area because it was so much political
turmoil
going on that, oh, we don't know if we're going to let him go, this, that, and other thing. And yeah. So I was kind of lost, because I'm like, I made this trip, and I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the American Embassy fought hard, the representative from the United States fought hard, and they made it happen. The day, that morning I woke up, because each day, of course, it was a real regimented trip. And the day they were supposed to make my trip and Dennis's trip, they came to me and said, listen, when I woke up in the morning, they said, we're going to make that trip today. And I was like, thank God.
Wow.
So we went to Dennis's first, his site, and the Vietnamese people really believe strongly in their ancestors. They believe that if I'm correct, they believe that everything that happens, you know, if they want something to happen, they pray through their ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they helped us do our tributes by providing food, water, incense, cigarettes, whatever. Basically for life. That was part of their ritual. So Dennis did his. And during Dennis's tribute to his dad, I noticed it was a white bird way off in the trees. Now, I don't know if a lot of people seen it, but I seen it for some reason. So I said, okay. Didn't think anything of it. So then we traveled hours to go over to the other side of the Oshawa Valley. I didn't realize how big the Oshawa Valley was.
Yeah, it seemed like it was just over there, and it was miles, right?
It was. So we get to the end, and because there's no more road, there's no more road.
That'll stop you fast.
So we walk down, we're walking barefooted, and all the natives are just looking at us because we have to cross this little creek. And I said, okay, fine, let's do this. And I'm carrying, I'm helping carry a vet. He was president of the VVA. Can't think of his name right now. But I'm assisting him because he's on a trip with us. Mm-hmm. And he's been going back and forth a lot because he would help with, you know, searching for our missing in action and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. he had a lot to do with that. So I was like, you know what? I'll carry you. Don't worry about that. I got it. So, you know, we had made fun of it all day and everything else. And I'm carrying him across these rocks. And I got no shoes on carrying him across these creeks. And the natives are laughing at us because, you know, they're running across and everything else. And I was like, you know, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this for him. You know, he deserves it. I'm going to do it. So we got across and I do my tribute. And I take the chain off my neck that I haven't taken off my neck in about 10 years, 10 to 12 years. This thing was always on my neck. Took the medallion off, laid it down. I felt like I took 1,000 pounds off my back. And so I look up, and I'm just looking off into the trees, and I see two white birds. And they're distinctive because the trees are green, but you can see there's two white birds sitting right there. Mm. And I was like, there's a gentleman, Father John, that was with us. So I looked at him, and he's like, he says, Robert, I already know. And I felt my father was there. I felt him there at that time. And from that point on, my life kind of took a change. I felt lighter. I felt like I've taken so much weight off me. And I let him go. I let him rest. I put him to rest. And that was probably the biggest emotional trip that I've ever taken in my life. But yeah, it helped me to get to where I'm at now.
Sometimes it's a rough road.
Yeah, it takes time. It was a rough road. It was a rough road. It was a very rough road. I'm glad I'm here today. You know, after we got back, you know, I was still doing Sons and Daughters in Touch. Last year, I was invited to meet with the president, to have breakfast with the president. Because every year, Sons and Daughters in Touch sends about 12 to 14 people to have breakfast with the president. It was their second year, I think it was their second year in a row doing it. So I was invited, and I got a chance to meet the president. Met a whole bunch of other dignitaries, generals, you know, 5-star generals, mm-hmm. a whole lot of people. And on this trip, before the trip was made, me and Michael Pulitzer had started to, you know, we had a conversation. You know, he called me one day and he was like, "You got 5 minutes to talk." And he told me what he was doing. He told me that he was doing a book on the 101st Airborne, the Condors, because they were Troop C. They were known as the Condors. And I said, "Yeah, I got a few minutes to talk." So after he talked to me, he's like, "Well, I'm going to have to put a whole new chapter in." And I was like, "Wow.
Now you've done it."
You know, I was like, "Wow." Beautiful. So I told him I was coming to D.C., and I told him what was going on. And he's like, "Well, can we get together?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm definitely going to make it a point." So we sat and we talked, and we talked for a long time, And later on, you know, this year, you know, I kept in contact with him, asking him about the book. He was looking for a publisher, so I believe that he decided to self-publish. And when I received the book, you know, he told me the book was done. I ordered my book right away.
Now there's a surprise.
I had to see it more so than anything else.
Yeah.
But I had to order the book, and you know, so much has happened to me, I want to say, within the last 3 to 4 years that is so much related to my father that I'm no longer that person, don't talk about him. You know, I want to hear these things. Like last year I was invited to his to stand in his place for his 50th reunion with Orange Free Academy. And it was a big step for me, you know, because I didn't know a lot of these people. And when they seen me, my mother was already there. First they had a cookout, so I said, "Yeah, I'll come to the cookout." You know, I was like, "Ma, where you at?" Because I don't know none of these people. Right. I'm walking into the cookout, and they're like, "Hold up, you're not old enough to be here." And I said, "Yeah,
let me explain."
You know, so and to see how he touched so many people. Some I could tell they just knew of him or just knew mm-hmm. him. They didn't really know him.
Right.
And some of the people that he really, when I told him, you know, "I'm Bobby Howard's son," and he's like, you know, they asked me, you know, what I wanted for a name tag. I said, "Just put Bobby Howard's son, because that's what everybody calls me."
That's cool.
Like, yeah. I don't have a name myself. My name is Robert also.
Yeah.
But they call me Bobby Howard's son.
Yeah.
So, you know, one young lady was like, she's like, "Your dad used to always smile, always ask me how I was doing. He always spoke to me every single day." every single day. I remember him from Stanton School all the way up through NFA. So I was like, okay, these are people that really, really know him.
That's where you got that rich, warm sense of humor. No, I'm serious. It comes through. I've never met you before today. And you're just so alive. And your laugh comes from the heart. It doesn't come from a, you know, that's, you must have gotten that from your dad.
Yeah, I guess. I guess. You know, but it felt good because even at the 50th reunion, which they kind of pair with the graduating class, which I think is really, really important that they, you know, they see where, you know, people are still coming back, still supporting the Orange Free Academy, even after, you know, being out of school for 50 years. It really gives a good look to the class that's graduating. But even then, they spoke about him at the graduation. And I was just like, wow, you know, just really, really in awe. And
there's a family there. There's a connection.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, since then, it's just things have just been coming my way. I mean, I went to D.C. this past Memorial Day and seen Rolling Thunder for a second time. But it always puts me in a state of awe of all these people that are just paying their respects for all these veterans that made their ultimate, for these soldiers that made their ultimate sacrifice, regardless of which war it was. But while I was there, I had the honor of meeting a family that a mother, a daughter, and a son that had lost, you know, she had lost her husband, their father, in Afghanistan, I want to say approximately maybe 8 years ago. And so I'm sitting there having dinner, and me and my sons and daughters in touch. I call them my sister, Michelle. If you ever want to meet anybody, Michelle's the person. I drag Michelle everywhere. Michelle, I want to meet Colin Powell. I want to meet this person. And she just has that light about her that, you know, they remember. Hey, Michelle, how you doing?
Really?
So I'm like, sis, I want to meet them.
There you go.
I always go to her.
Good for you.
And so, you know, she woke me up. She's like, listen, you want to go to the dinner with one of the families? Because during a Memorial Day concert, what they do is they bring families in, and they actually had different actors portraying these families of telling their story.
Really?
Which is really, really powerful.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting with the family, and you know, the mother mentions that her son, Cameron, has a lot of anger built up in him. And I automatically connected. I was like, yeah, I know what he's talking about. And me and Cameron had an opportunity to talk. And especially after the concert, after the Memorial Day concert, we talked. And I told him, I said, you know, I said, your dad's really proud of you. I know he is. I know. I said, you can't feel it. I said, but I know he is. I said, I know where you're coming from. I've been there. I understand, you know, every feeling that you have. And, you know, it was just such a powerful thing. Hold on. That, I felt good about my whole trip. My trip was complete because I got to talk to this young man. And so my last day there, I seen the family again. You know, I said my goodbyes and everything else. And he pulled me aside. We talked and he's like, Robert, thank you so much for everything. And I was like, for what? You know, he's like, just being able to talk to you, you know, made me feel good. And I was like, I didn't know what to say. You know, I was just grateful that I had the opportunity to help somebody that needed that help, or just somebody that he could identify with.
Yeah,
because I know what it is to have that hole that's never going to be replaced.
Right.
But you know, he'll carry his father's legacy. He'll carry, you know, he'll definitely, you know, hopefully it makes him strong like it did for me.
And it's clear that while on the trip to Vietnam, and what year was that?
Oh. It was night, oh man, I want to say early 2000.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
So it was approximately, because my wife was pregnant with my youngest. So it had, he'll be 12 years. So it was about 12 years ago.
Okay.
Approximately 12 years ago.
So 2003 or two.
Yeah,
right
about, yep, two, yep, it was in 2003.
It just comes through loud and clear that while you said you were able to let him go, you were able to let him rest, you were mm-hmm. able to find that peace. I don't like using the word closure. I think it's sort of a trite word, but I know that it's well-intended. But you were able to do that, and yet your father continues to affect and shape your life in every day since.
Yeah, he does. He does. You know, sometimes it's like, wow, you just leave me alone. But it's in a good sense now where it doesn't get to a point where it becomes a burden, a cumbersome.
Well, because it's
I don't mind doing
it. I suspect because it's coming from a place that's inside you.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I get.
I don't have a problem opening up to people and letting that vulnerability out anymore. Yeah. It is. It, you know, my life is what it is.
Yeah.
I've learned from it. I've had some hard roads that, you know, and these hard roads I've chose to take. It wasn't like I was forced down.
Right.
I chose to make those decisions in life. And it's given me a different perspective. And it's also allowed me to be able to talk to my children about the good and bad of life. Because guess what? I've been there, done that. But it's also made me better father, a stronger father, because I knew that when I had children, I would never, ever, ever want my children to go through the headache that I went through. And more so in the fact that them not knowing who their dad is, being an absentee father, mm-hmm. like so many kids nowadays have.
Yep.
The fathers come out the woodwork when the son does something famous. Oh, yeah, I'm his dad. But what about all the mother years?
Yeah.
You know? I wanted to be a father. I didn't want to be a dad. And so that's made me really close and tight-knit with my children, that I'm always there for them, whatever it may be.
Robert Howard, and some of your story is told in The Price They Paid.
Yes.
By Michael Putzel in the first couple of chapters of that book. But you have really given us more than just an opening or a window into something that is a significant part of Norwich, because we are a community, and
yes.
any community is made up of human beings, but of allowing us the privilege of seeing into your life a little bit. And you are a very sharing person. Thank you. I don't know how anybody could not be deeply moved by your story.
Well, thank you.
I hope that you continue to tell it. First to your children.
Yes, my children know. My children know. I don't hide anything from them.
Yeah.
My past, I don't hide from them, because it's made me who I am today.
Yeah.
You know, I don't hide my past from them. We talk about anything and everything. You know, my middle son, Robert Jr., he's the third. When you first look at him and you look at my father, it looks like that's his child, not my child.
Really? Yeah.
So I tell my ex-wife all the time, I was like, what happened? I don't look like I had anything to do with this. You know, and it's kind of an on-running joke, you know, you know, it's...
Well, sometimes characteristics will skip a generation. No, honest, I read that somewhere.
yeah. So, but, you know, I mean, it's just, I've had a good life. I mean, considering the choices I've made, I'm very fortunate to be here today.
Yeah.
And be healthy and not have any ongoing health issues because of what I've done in the past. So I'm just very fortunate, very, very fortunate in being able to, you know, share who I am, and being able to maybe help one person. That just means the world to me. I mean, you couldn't pay me enough to the feeling that I feel when I actually help somebody.
How old are your kids now?
Let me see. My oldest one is 20, Kamari. Robert is 17, getting ready to graduate next week. And Quincy, my little man, I call him, he's 11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a, you got your work cut out for you.
Yes,
you've only just begun.
Yes. Yes, they are.
They're doing well, I hope.
Yeah, they're doing well. They're all doing well.
What an example they have to live by. And
yeah.
You know.
I try every day.
Well, it's you seem very natural. It's just about being yourself, and that's how you've helped other people. And
mm-hmm.
You know,
and I'll always be myself.
What is the future for you? What you got planned?
Well, I'm presently in school, trying to finish up my degree, an associate's degree, and I go on and get my bachelor's degree in business with a major in organizational leadership. And just right now, that's my focus. And just, you know, getting Robert off to the start of his young adult life. He's going into the Air National Guard. Good for him. Because college is so expensive nowadays. It's just unbelievable. My oldest one is going back to UConn. He'll be at the UConn-Hartford campus, West Hartford campus in the fall. So all of them have directions in life. So it's just, I have one more. Which him, I don't think he's going to leave
the house.
You
never stop being a dad, though, Robert.
No, you never do. You never do. It's always something, dad.
And you've learned that firsthand already.
Yeah. I'm always going to be there for him. Yeah. Always going to be there for him.
Yeah. Well, you've shared this very important anniversary in your life with us, and I appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
I have to say it's probably, and we've just touched the surface. I know that you could do a 7-day interview if we fed you and
I don't know
you
about
didn't
all
have
that.
A family. To
I can't go
take
for a couple
of
days.
But
I can go for a couple of days.
It's remarkable.
They'll be calling me, Dad. You gonna cook? Dad, you gonna cook?
Dad, I need some money. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta come home.
Please keep telling your story.
No,
man.
I definitely will. So like I said, Michael just gave me another piece that, you know, it felt good. It felt real good, you know, and just seeing the book and saying, hey, listen, I got another piece, you know.
I've been in radio off and on since I was 16 years old. I think this is the most powerful interview I've ever done and blessed my life, too. And I hope
Thank you.
Those that hear it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for stopping by.
Well, anytime.
Some incredibly powerful moments spent with Robert Howard Jr. I'm Kevin Harkins, and I'll be right back.